10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Good evening, Walter M. Sterling from Coast to Coast. What? Oh, yeah. Now, Dr. Dave Weather.
Baby, if you ever wondered whatever became of me. Sterling every damn night. Got tired of idiots and morons, the kind who own radio firms. Now I'm doing radio my own way. My own way on my own terms. I'm coast to coast on Sterling every damn night. Even in Cincinnati.
Gosh, look at this, ladies and gentlemen. Can you believe it? Throughout North America, you know what's going to happen tomorrow in many suburbs? Trash day.
When I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you love tonight.
That mother-in-law special today, huh?
With your smile so warm and your cheeks so soft.
You know, this was the first charted hit. You know who recorded it? That answer in seconds.
Get those ratings with this nonsense. How is that possible? How can we copy this if this is what he does? This is what he does? Holy crap.
Back in 1951 in Cleveland, we coined a phrase that became the biggest pop musical era in the world. The words rock and roll.
All right, let's get serious about this now. You ready? Let's go. Let's go. Sunday night, Easter Sunday, escaping the relatives, rushing home, looking forward to work. You ready? You gonna hit the vocal with me? Like a big boy disc jockey? Ready? 2, 3, 4, go! I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it.
Just terrible.
go. Go. This woman is so hot. Forget about politics. Forget about all that crap. This is so freaking hot.
My advice to that unnamed low-level French politician would be to remind them that it's only because of the United States of America that the French are not speaking German right now.
14 past the hour, 14 past the hour, coast to coast. Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday. How lucky are you? I mean, think about the alternative of shows that you could be listening to right now. These American stories. Yeah. Or it's the Bitcoin show. And now for $18,000, you can invest in Bitcoin. Yeah, I'm going to do that. Annuities and you. Yeah. Okay. Or what else we got here? The Lumberyard show, the Automobile show, the Auto and You show. The only automobile information that I've ever seen that's worth anything, and in fact is really useful, is on TikTok and Instagram. I can see these Chinese people, a woman and sometimes a guy, running around their car, a little car, the brand of which I have never seen before, explaining to me how I can fix my car. They tell me actually useful things, and it came up today that I used it from this Chinese woman who was always yelling at me. She's always saying, if you do this, you will waste $3,000. You're stupid. If you don't do this, the mechanic will charge you $5,000. You're an idiot. She gives you very practical tips, all the things I've always wanted to know. And what is the primary question that we need answered about our car? How to turn off the check engine light. How to turn off the engine light. For many years, we were satisfied with the knowledge that many people could do that by just tightening their gas cap. It was a problem with the gas cap. But that never worked for me. A chip in the gas cap could make that go off. That never worked for me. Then she gives a piece of advice. You open the hood. You look at the battery. You pull off the negative connector. You leave it off for 10 seconds, she says, but it could be 10 minutes because she's being translated from Chinese by AI. You take it off for 10 seconds or 10 minutes. Then you put it back on. And the check engine light goes off. I wish to God I had known this for the past 400 years. Because every place I've ever lived, I cannot get the car inspected if the check engine light is on. They won't pass it. If I had known this was a 10-second fix, my life would have been completely changed. Everything would have been much better at that point.
I'm going to go eat some chicken parm.
Chicken parm?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Hey, thanks for inviting me to your Easter dinner. What? What is this show? This is so strange. Why isn't he yelling at Congress? Shut up. Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday.
Now! Join the lesbians in
space. She's a 10, but she needs to hear how obsessed you are with her at least 3 times a day.
It's me, I'm she. I'm waiting.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night.
I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're here to tell you stories of living with our 8 kids in our old house. Kids are older. We find ourselves getting out a little bit more. We went to a theater to see a singer.
And we ended up encountering a little more noise than we thought we would. So we're there with another couple, and the guy disappears. Seems like he's not feeling quite right. He's a little restless. Something's going on, and he disappears. Yeah. So we're kind of worried about him. His wife doesn't seem to be really worried, but she seems to be just annoyed at him in general. Like, we went to this event, and he doesn't really want to be there. So I get concerned. And we walk out into the other, outside the theater doors, into the dining area. And we see him sitting there at a high top, kind of like bent over, leaning over and holding his chest.
He doesn't look like he's having a good time.
No.
Something's wrong.
Something's wrong. And having been through, you know, heart issues in our family before, Dan's a heart attack survivor. I automatically think there's something really wrong with this guy. And, you know, he's just trying to barrel through.
But he ends up saying, you ask how he is. He ends up saying, oh, it's just, what did he say?
GI issues.
He's rubbing his chest and saying GI. Now, that means gastrointestinal, right?
Right. And as you well know, sometimes a heart attack can feel like indigestion, something coming up from the bottom of your stomach, pushing, you know, tightness. I think the guy's having a heart attack. And of course, I start to say, you know, okay, you're having chest pains. We got to be really careful. I'm worried that the dude's having a heart attack. And I end up looking like a complete and total fool, because just as I'm about ready to run over to the wall and get some paddles out, rub them together and bring him back to life, he says,
no, it's the bottom end.
Okay, so now it's awkward. Guy's not having a heart attack. Might have felt better if he was, because now we're at the theater. Wife's missing. We're standing there, and he's telling us that he basically just had a blowout in the bathroom.
And then the theater manager comes down the hallway by the bathroom where he just was and proclaims loudly to the staff,
whoo, whoo, we need some spray back here. Oh, get the spray.
Immediately,
she was using the word spray.
Immediately, the wife comes out. The wife comes out. Ah, the wife comes out and says, are you ready to go? As if she knew what had already been happening while we're standing there thinking the guy's dying. So we're about 20 minutes into this show. They pick up and leave.
Yeah.
Utterly embarrassed.
He fouls the air of the theater, and then they leave.
Totally embarrassed. They leave. We've decided we're staying at home with the children and never going out again. Moral of the story, if you are having chest pains, say that you are having chest pains. If you are causing complete and utter devastation to everyone in the public restroom, make sure you say that before I come and try to revive you.
Dan Gaffney here. Like me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
If you're looking for me, you can find me on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Dan and Becky, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night.
Marty on the Long Island Railroad, conductor on the Long Island Railroad, listens to Sterling every damn night. Now, why do I keep saying every damn night? That's because we are on six nights a week. And you can hear me on the Odyssey app. Stupid name of company. Great company. AUDACY. Odyssey app. And select WPHT. That's our base in Philadelphia, our very first affiliate. And every damn night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m., you can hear this brilliant, amazing show, which sounds unusual in the context of AM radio. My phone number is 855-839-1210. That's our live line. Call that when you want to go on the air. 855-839-1210. Phil in North Carolina. Welcome to Sterling every damn night.
Hey, Walter. How are you?
Honored to be with you. Happy Easter, sir.
Yes, to you too. He has risen, they say.
Now, listen, I have seen the same information. I've seen this amazing report that came out in the past 48 hours, which actually does reveal about the Kennedy assassination, which we had not really seen. Somebody finally read the 80,000 pages. Now,
there's
a profound connection
between
that assassination and the mob. Do you think that's true?
Well, let me tell you something. As far as my father said, the mob doesn't exist. It's a pigment of your imagination. Like my father said, literally, like the mob doesn't exist. Like supposedly it's like a made up story.
Do you have a point here, today? Phil? I think you have a point. Don't you have a point to share with us?
I'm sorry. Am I coming clear? Because I'm on the AT&T network. I don't know if you can hear me. Hello?
I hear you perfectly, my friend.
Okay, cool. Well, let me tell you something. Like, seriously, I think we've been duped for a long time. And I don't think we can be duped no more. You know,
Phil? You have to get to it because this isn't an old-fashioned talk show, it's a new show. I understand.
It's everything. We've been duped about everything. A, B, expansive geometry is where you were when you're born.
I'm right here, Phil.
Okay, your second day of birth, right? You were born like 50% of your life, your second day of birth. And so when you're, that's why you feel so old when you get old. It's called the expansive geometry, right?
Do you usually call Mark Levin? Are you usually on Levin's show? Or do you call Coast to Coast at 3:30 in the morning? Let me tell you something.
Well, let me tell you something. I shouldn't reveal this, but I'm actually Levin's call screener.
Yeah, and do you have any other fantasies to share with us?
Well, I mean, you really want to, you don't want to know.
Are you done?
No, I'm not done.
Are you done? Oh, he gave up. Now, one of the first rules of being a good host is never let the caller end the call. I let that go on to get it out of his system, and because I knew that on a level that you do not hear on real talk shows.
I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it.
You would find it entertaining. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and you and I are here from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. East Coast, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. West Coast on KFBK, and coming up in just seconds, what will I do? Oh, yeah. I want to share with you some deep thoughts I have about Abby Lee Miller. Remember her? And about autism, because it's National Autism Awareness Month, which is not why I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about it because of my beautiful, beautiful daughter. All right, Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday.
Boom, boom, Hollywood, Sterling every damn night.
All right, 37 past the hour, Walter M. Sterling, live on the radio, live on a Sunday night, live on Easter Sunday. Hold that thought. Go up and down the dial. Any AM station, any FM station, unless it's an all-news station, I promise you it is pre-recorded. But yet you and I are here on Easter night. Nobody died. That's terrible. What did I just say on Easter? Nobody suffered. No, it doesn't work either. Mateus, Boom Boom in Hollywood, our live friend in Los Angeles, in California. Welcome to Easter every damn night. Hi.
Great, Walter. And again, I commend your fine kazoo playing tonight. I have to say that more people are hearing you play the kazoo live on this program that are live today than the first time the kazoo was introduced at the Georgia State Fair in 1852. I guarantee it.
Let's go back over that. Is that when it actually was first introduced at the Georgia State Fair, or is that a good radio story?
No. That is actually when it was introduced. A German clockmaker and another guy, the clockmaker was Thaddeus von Gleg. Sounds like a Gleg. Thaddeus von Gleg that a German name? Anyway, they introduced it at the fair, and then later, by 1915, these two guys got together and put a patent on it by 23. The metal one was introduced in 1915, but it was the Georgia State Fair. No one is still alive who attended the 1852 fair, so that guarantees that your performance tonight was heard by more than at that event, but we're glad it did because your kazoo playing is great.
You want to know another statistic that always frightens and excites people in a sexual way?
Sure.
All right. If you live in a city with an all-news radio station, Los Angeles, San Francisco, KMOX counts, WBZ, 1010 Winds in New York, KYW in Philadelphia, KRLD in Dallas, all these stations should clear my show. But here's the point. Any one of those stations in that city at almost any given time has more listeners than CNN or MSNBC or CNBC has viewers in that city at any given time. A lot
more. I love it.
A lot more. More people listen to KNX most of the day than watch CNBC, CNN, MSNBC in Los Angeles.
That's remarkable. And I think it's wonderful.
And also, and the first time I learned this was 1,000 years ago. I saw a sales piece for a New York City radio station, and their morning man was named John Gambling. And the piece said, more New Yorkers listen to John Gambling in New York than watch Johnny Carson in New York. And I'm like, yes, I know that's true. And then you look it up, and it's not a little, it's a lot. CNBC, MSNBC, CNN rarely hit 500,000 viewers in the country. In the country. And if the program director of KNX in Los Angeles or any all-news station in the country only had 500,000 viewers in a given week, they'd be fired. That's how big the difference is. And that's in a 50-mile circle versus the country. I'm done.
That's remarkable. Earlier in the broadcast today, you brought up one of my favorite songs, The Way You Look Tonight. And I'm looking forward to later when you're going to tell us the first time that that charted. But, you know, I talk about movies on this show. And that song was initially featured in a movie in 1936. Fred Astaire sang it to Ginger Rogers in the movie Swing Time. It won the Oscar for Best Song.
Yeah. And that was the first charted hit. He did it. Fred Astaire in the 30s was the number one recording artist.
Remarkable.
It is.
I know. That was with Johnny Green's orchestra on Brunswick. Yeah.
He had multiple number one songs. He was the number one recording artist in the 1930s.
Fantastic. I didn't mean to take that. I thought you were going to tell us a later charting number because, you know, it wasn't until much later than recording than charted started. And certainly radio had a lot to do with that. But that's fascinating to me. Fascinating. Well, let's talk about a movie. There's a movie that was made in Newark, and that doesn't happen often.
No.
And so I thought it was particularly interesting that there's this kind of a scary, not really a horror movie, but sort of a thriller. It's called Gazer, and it stars Ariella Mastroianni, who is this beautiful olive-skinned girl with beautiful eyes and dark hair. I mean, a strikingly beautiful face. She's stunning. And I know because I met her in person last week when, following the advanced screening of this in California, I did a Q&A with both the director and this actress. So I was able to talk to her in person, and she's delightful in person as well. But having said that, she plays a woman in this movie, Gazer, which is playing in select theaters across the country, has a neurological condition that doesn't allow her to perceive and manage time correctly. It's called dyschronometria, or time blindness. So we see a series of events she watches from her flat and her job at a gas station in Newark, and from her point of view, and she has to use this cassette player to keep herself in the moment with her own self-voiced instruction. So it becomes very interesting to figure out what she's doing and how she's doing it and what she's watching. And during this process, she notices that there's a woman that's in distress. She tries to help her out, but then she gets involved in this very sordid plot. So this is a really fascinating movie made by just the star, Miss Mastroianni, and Ryan J. Sloan, who's the director. Now, Sloan is electrician. He still works every day today as an electrician. And he made this movie in and around his dad's electrical company called Telstar, named after the NASA satellite, Telstar Electric in Jersey. So he literally did guerrilla filmmaking with a 16-millimeter camera in this digital age and went around to all these places in Newark, including a yarmulke-making factory where they shot some of the action scenes. So it's really interesting, and it's especially interesting to these two young people who really love movies submitted it to the Cannes Film Festival in Europe, the most hoity-toity, prestigious film festival of all, and it was accepted and shown at the Cannes Festival. So here's an electrician from Newark who gets a movie shown at the Cannes Festival, and I just think that's a great story. And people who are from Jersey have seen this film, and they think it's a love letter to Jersey. You can tell there's a scene in a gas station where something crazy goes by, and a guy in his truck says, "Only in Jersey." Well, it's about as realistic as you can imagine. Not once did this director, Ryan J. Sloan, point his camera towards the Manhattan skyline. All internally Newark. And I just thought that was a great story, that they made it all the way to the Cannes Film Festival, shot on film. They're young. It's their first movie together. And it's now playing in select theaters with some acclaim.
Why do I think it's in black and white? Is it in black and white?
It's not. It's in widescreen and color.
Wow.
Yeah.
The reason most movies are not shot in Newark is that people want to keep their equipment after it's over or at the end of the day. An amazing and horrible fact about Newark is that through most of its history, from, say, 1948 until modern times, it had no movie theater or supermarket. And then a 10-screen opened up in about 1972. But by 1988, that shut down. It's still standing there. The multiplex is still standing there, but completely abandoned, and you'd risk your life. Well, it's a very interesting city in that it was a magnificent city. People who grew up in Jersey, older people who grew up in Jersey, my parents who grew up in Jersey, they talk about Newark with great romance and fondness until the riots. And when the riots hit, none of them would ever go down there again, ever, for any reason. Members of my family, relatives of ours, friends of ours lost their businesses, lost their livelihood, lost their homes. And it was a terrifying time because the wealthiest suburbs of New Jersey border Newark. Short Hills, Millburn, Maplewood, South Orange, they border Newark. And they're in deep denial about that. Those two streets that border Newark, they don't remember that. No, we really don't. We're not really there. I'm going to see that movie because I grew up in New Jersey, and therefore you need to tell me the name again.
It's called Gazer, G-A-Z-E-R.
And the woman in this, was she nude?
No, she's a beautiful face, though, let me tell you. The face is enough to carry your imagination through the end of the story.
Well, maybe. All right, Mateus Boombum, and beyond. Mateus Boombum, Hollywood, our great friend, a terrific film critic. And if I want to stay in touch with you during the week, I want to learn more about you, how do I do that?
On Facebook, it's Mateus Boombum's Hollywood. That's M-A-T-I-A-S. B-O-M-B-A-L, Hollywood, that's M-A-T-I-A-S, B-O-M-B-A-L, Hollywood, on Facebook. And I thank you, Walter.
I thank you, Mateus. Walter M. Sterling, that's my name, and I am here every damn Sunday.
Now, join the lesbians in space.
Tattoos anywhere.
No. Honey, would you put a bumper sticker on a Bentley?
On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to tell the story of Tom and Jerry. Tom and Jerry were a couple of radio car partners in the early 90s when I first got to the precinct. Both were Vietnam veterans in their early 40s and were still on patrol. I got a kick out of the two older guys as they handled it. They were very professional. They handled each call by the book. Well, after about 6 months in the precinct, Jerry got promoted to sergeant in his early 40s and left the command. And I always worried about Jerry because he was so by the book, I thought he might have trouble managing young cops. Well, that's what wound up happening is within 6 months in a precinct supervising young cops, kind of had a mutiny in his hands until he was able to back off a little. Tommy, what wound up happening is after Jerry left, became the precinct training officer. So a couple of times a week, Tommy would wheel in a cart that had a television set and a VCR and he'd pop in a tape and play the latest NYPD propaganda. And when we would say, yeah, Tommy, why do we got to watch this crap? He would say, listen, this beats patrol. This is my new gig now. And Tommy was a lot more easygoing than Jerry. But make no mistake, he could become unglued if he thought things were being done unfairly. And to give you an example, we went to a paintball outing in upstate New York. He shows up like something out of The Deer Hunter, all covered in camouflage. And at some point during the paintball outing, he accused another NYPD member of cheating. Well, the guy kind of laughed it off and raised the butt of his paintball gun at Tommy, kidding around like, get out of here. And Tommy went wild. We had to restrain him. Tommy also had that thousand-yard stare where he would just look off into the distance sometime and he wasn't there. Like, Tommy, you're right? He goes, yeah, I'm fine. Well, after Tommy retired, he became a pilot. And in 2002, he was transporting with a prop plane a shipment of legal documents from Mobile Airport. His plane was only up in the air a short time when he got on the radio and told the tower, I need to deviate. Unfortunately, Tommy's plane crashed. And to this day, the NTSB has no answers. The plane was scattered over a large swamp, and they know he hit something, but to this day, they can't figure out what it is. Some of the pieces of the plane had red paint on it, and they can't figure out. They've sent the pieces to two independent labs, and they can't figure out what it is. So that's the story of Tom and Jerry, two great NYPD cops. Unfortunately, one is not with us now. So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Presumption and Dysfunction. And if you have a question for me, feel free to drop me a note at wolfhound728@gmail.com.
Still an everyday night.
All right, look at you. What a shock it is that you made it through Easter. I'm Walter M. Sterling. I'm live on Easter night, just like you. You're almost live. And it is weekends like this that make us very grateful for Monday morning or for the shift coming up. Because we get to be away from our family. We get to be alone. And one of the tragic tragedies, one of the tragic traditions, what are you saying? One of the tragic traditions of our culture is we cannot say what I just said. We cannot say, I've had enough family. I had enough family after 8 minutes. And now I get to work. And people would say to me, you can do your show tonight? It's Easter. I'm like, oh, yes, I'm going to do my show tonight because it's the only respite I will have for insanity. I realize something terrifying about my in-laws. And I don't know why it's taken me so long to realize this about my in-laws. They never talk about the present or the future. They only talk about the past. And in their case, the past is all dead. Everybody they're talking about, great-grandma this, great-uncle this, great-great-great-uncle this, they're all dead. I never met them. I had no relationship with them. I had no relationship with my children, had no relationship with them. None of us had any relationship with these people. And therefore, it's a really boring meal every time. And my mother-in-law, with whom, for some reason, I'm always at these holidays, only knows how to make three things. How about your mother-in-law? Does your mother-in-law make anything that you love? Does your mother-in-law make anything you love? I want to know. 855-839-1210. That's my phone number. 855-839-1210. And you get to talk to Alex, and Alex will say, you got to go on the air, man. And that's why you call that number. It's the live line, 855-839-1210. My mother-in-law only makes three dishes. She makes meatloaf, which I like because I like meatloaf. That's it. Does she make that usually? No. Usually she makes this horrendous chicken curry with asparagus. Now, when I go into an Indian restaurant, when I order curry chicken, there's no asparagus. There's, you know, naan bread. I love naan bread. Isn't that great? She makes this curry chicken. And I'm like, oh, curry chicken, great. And I'm thinking an Indian restaurant. And then it appears in front of me. And it bears no relationship to the Indian restaurant. It has curry on top of it. And then hiding underneath, ready to attack me, is freaking asparagus. Sterling every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Oh, can you believe it? I have updates for you on the Kennedy assassination and UFOs because it's Easter. And now, Dr. Dave Weather.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a radio whiz. His head overflowed with brilliant ideas to make the radio great. But his bosses were all idiots, and all they could do is hate. This wizard set off on his own, on his epic quest, to make his show the greatest, better than all the rest, better than all the rest.
And now he's back on the radio with his merry crew,
with Velo, Detective Vic, Thea Landon and her smutty books, the Gaffneys, Dave Scott, Florida Stories, and all the rest. Here on Sterling every damn night. Here on Sterling every damn night.
I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it.
22 past the hour, coast to coast, Walter M. Sterling, WGAN in Maine. Paul Vandenberg's radio station in Albany, Michael Ewing's radio station in Sebring, Florida, and soon WSB in Atlanta, just to scare them to death. Walter M. Sterling. It's terrifying and frightening, but I was sharing before with you this far more terrifying person.
She deserves nothing. Don't have an attitude that you are entitled in this world. You are not. You deserve
Abby Lee Miller. Abby Lee Miller. We're on KDKA in Pittsburgh. When they have a host out sick, did they ever ask Abby Lee Miller to be on KDKA when she lived in Pittsburgh? The woman was born to do a talk show. She has radio facts. She has no facts. She has no long thoughts and no long sentences. And that's the key to doing this successfully. No long thoughts, no long sentences, and no facts. Radio facts, yes. Other facts, random. But I was thinking, you know, I take off very few days for a talk show host. Most of them take off 8 or 9 weeks a year. And they do 4-day weeks, and usually they're at home. Not me. It's Easter Sunday. Do you see any other talk show host? Have you gone up and down the dial to try to find anybody except the Bitcoin show and Social Security and you? No, you haven't. And I have guest stars come in, and we've had great hosts. I'm very grateful for my great host. But I'm like, how can I up this? Now, I could have Bubba the Love Sponge in, which is always tempting and a good way to torture the staff. Or I could get Abby Lee Miller. I think Abby Lee Miller would be a terrific guest star.
Absolutely.
Mrs. Sterling, do you think so?
I absolutely do.
Do you remember watching Abby Lee Miller on TV?
I agree. It's why our daughters had to do dance, competitive dance.
Right. And they have knee injuries for life because of Abby Lee Miller. And I think it would be great to have her as a fill-in host.
Absolutely.
Because she's all opinion. She's sure. She's absolute. That's what you need to have a professional talk show. It's like professional wrestling, except far less money at risk. How do you feel about that? 855-839-1210. 85. You remember Abby Lee Miller? 855-839-1210.
She deserves nothing. Don't have an attitude that you are entitled in this world. You are not. You deserve nothing else.
I think she'd be great. She's in Los Angeles now. She moved to Los Angeles, I think. She's also on Cameo. Now, if you haven't experimented with Cameo, you really need to. Cameo is where celebrities who want to pick up some fast cash, they'll make a video for you, answering, performing for you. Happy birthday, congratulations on your promotion, you're retired, whatever it is. They'll give you a salutation, a little message. And Abby Lee Miller did one for my daughter Dorothy, who was a dance kid and a competitive dance kid, as was my daughter Meredith. They were both beautiful, magnificent, competitive dancers. And it had a lot to do with Abby Lee Miller. And then when it was Dorothy's birthday 2 years ago, I got Abby Lee Miller to talk to her. Now she's a TV producer, and talk to her and saying, I hope she does. Hope you're not going to be one of those reality TV producers. They're just the worst.
She deserves nothing. Don't have an attitude that you are entitled in this world. You are not. You deserve nothing else. You earn it.
Yeah, she'd be a really good talk show host. I am shocked that nobody's approached her. I'm shocked that, of course, it could be she asked about money. And then when she learned what the money was in radio versus doing her TV show, she's like, what? I can earn that. I can earn in a year on the radio what I could earn in a day on TV. It depends. Some of the, you know, the funny thing about radio, the weird thing about radio, is this is a fact. When I talk to college professors and I say, why don't you have a more robust radio curriculum in your communications school? Oh, there's no interest. Kids have no interest in radio. They have no. I'm like, do you know these facts about radio? Ready? The highest paid performers in America are not on TV. They're on radio. What? The highest paid programmer, programming executive, doesn't work in cable, isn't at NBC. He works in radio by far. It's crazy. I promise you, in any given city, wherever you live, there's a sales team for the radio stations, a sales team for the TV stations. I promise you, the top biller at the radio station's making more than the top biller at the TV station. You're kidding. And the market manager, person who runs a cluster of radio stations, and a cluster of TV stations or runs TV, I promise you the president of the cluster of radio makes more than the person running the TV stations. Now, why wouldn't kids be interested in that? And there are more people right now listening to 1010 Wins than watching CNBC, MSNBC, or CNN. More people right now listening to KYW Radio, all news radio, than watching CNN, MSNBC, CNBC in America. There are more people listening to a local station, a big local station, than are watching cable news in America. I don't see what the competition is. More people listen to this show than are watching CNBC in your town. There's no accounting for taste, but I'm just saying that this shouldn't be an issue. If you're thinking about a career, really, radio's a lot better deal than TV.
Just terrible.
I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it.
And that's why I want to have Abby Lee Miller. Abby Lee Miller should be the next person who helps me out on vacation when I take a couple days off. I get to have a couple days off. I think that's fair. It's hard to say. But there I was, Easter Sunday. Did you say something to me? Yeah, you're whispering to me. You can't whisper to me. I'm deaf. I'm on the air. Walter M. Sterling. Go to the White House lawn.
Oh, And I have to thank our First Lady. She worked so hard on this event. And without her, it would not be like it is.
Terrible.
It's as beautiful as I've ever seen it.
And Goat is always in such a bad mood. Lucy Goosey was thrilled.
We got to pull off the end of that. Lucy Goosey was thrilled. We got to have that isolated so we can play it like we play these.
I think you're emotionally cheating.
I have a question for you. Every year I hear about the egg roll on the White House lawn. And of course, I always think that means two from column A, one from column B. But no. I have no idea what an egg roll is at Easter. Tell me the truth. Do you know what an egg roll is at your church garden, in your backyard? Have you ever had an egg roll? It's never been explained to me. Everybody says, like, and at the White House, they're going to have the annual egg roll. I'm like, what does that mean? What do they do? Can you win an egg roll? Is this like a soapbox derby of egg? Caught you on that reference. Hey, buddy. No, don't screw around. I'm a real talk show host. I know what I'm doing if I choose. How often do I choose? Not really. But there is every year, with great sanctity, the egg roll on the White House lawn. I'm like, oh, okay. How do I get into it? Oh, you don't. There's a lottery. The tickets are only given out to friends of the president, friends of the people who work in the White House, children of people who work in the White House. It's a short list. You don't get there. And of course, since it's the White House lawn and there's the president and the first lady, you're going to be vetted by the Secret Service before you get through that gate. Not everybody's going to volunteer to go through that. But I don't know what it is. If it's just looking for eggs, I know what that is, but we don't call that an egg roll. We call it an Easter egg hunt. Is it an Easter egg hunt? And then we'll see like 4 seconds of some kid running down the lawn, and I'm supposed to understand what an egg roll is from that. Now, I'm not that stupid. If this was done everywhere, I'd know what an egg roll is. When I've asked friends, even you, I've said, what the hell is an egg roll? Oh, you know, they do it every year on the White House lawn. Yeah, but what is it? What do they do? Do you win it? Is it like Minecraft where people just play it endlessly but nobody wins except the production company for that movie? Nobody wins. Do you know that about Minecraft? Do you have any awareness of popular games at all at your age? Ask your great-great-great-grandchildren about Minecraft and Tokoboka and Sims 4. Get up to date here. You need to know. No, Club Penguin, that was so 9 years ago. That's over. Nobody plays that because Disney ruined it. They actually ruined a really good game. But what the hell is the White House egg roll? And how do I get invited to it? Well, the tickets are already sold out. Tickets have already all been given out. There's no... And you can come to the egg roll at these hours and line up at the gate. There's none of that. This is like the most exclusive event. This is like getting into the most exclusive golf club in America, like getting into Baltusrol or Pebble Beach. Nobody gets into Baltusrol. Even if you know about it, the men in black will come tonight and take away your knowledge of Baltusrol. You're not supposed to know about that. But what the hell is the egg roll? 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. The other annoying thing about Easter that you experience today is the traditions that you married into are the traditions you're stuck with. They don't want your family's traditions. They have no interest. You know who they are. They have no interest in your family's traditions. Here's Easter in my family. Let me tell you a story. My father was Mr. Gift. My father was obsessed with gifts. And what he would do is he made sure that we had as many gifts on Easter as we had at Christmas. He felt it was that important. Not the religious part, but the gift-giving part. He thought that was a very good tradition. And, of course, as children, we, of course, agreed with him. So the point is that he made a display for Easter that was as good as you're going to find at Bloomingdale's or Macy's or Lord & Taylor's. We'd come down on Easter morning, and the whole living room would be in red, pink, purple, yellow gels. Wherever we looked, all the things that they had gotten from the Easter Bunny were put all around our living room and then covered with special lighting effects, battery-powered gifts, wrapping, battery-powered gift wrapping, and replicas of the Easter Bunny, replicas of the Easter Bunny's hutch. It was crazy. And we got as much stuff on Easter as we did on Christmas. I thought that was the norm. I had an abundantly gift-giving family. And my parents, unlike me, had nothing to feel guilty about. We felt very protected, very loved. My brother, sister, and I could easily agree on our parenting. We loved our parents. We were well cared for. It's something we'd never have disagreed about. We don't talk for years at a time, but that doesn't matter. That's what I thought you did. And then many people were invited over for a formal sit-down dinner. Now, some Easters I'd hear these words coming from downstairs. Asbury Park. Other years I'd hear Atlantic City. And that meant we were going to the Easter parade on a boardwalk. And we'd get in the car and drive 2 hours down the shore and go to Asbury Park or Atlantic City. And those were amazing days. Because, you know, spring at the shore is not to be missed. And for a kid, every single square inch of a boardwalk is fantastic. We'd go down there, and I'd put on saddle shoes, like every kid. I had to wear saddle shoes on Easter and other major holidays, which were always, what? Incredibly uncomfortable. But my mother would look magnificent. My father would put on a suit and tie, and that's how we went to the boardwalk. And what did we do? Cotton candy was my goal. I wasn't as interested in fudge. My mother was far more interested in fudge. I'd get cotton candy, and we'd get pizza on the boardwalk, and we'd go to an arcade, and I'd hear this from my mother's mouth. Don't waste your money. You're not going to win anything. And my father would say, well, come on, let's try this, or let's try this. And like any kid, I always wanted the claw. And the claw is a scam, and you're not going to win anything, but there's always hope, ladies and gentlemen. There is always hope. These are great American traditions. In Spain, do they celebrate Easter this way? Do they go to the Algarve in Spain, in Portugal? Do they go to the Algarve in Portugal and walk on those disgusting beaches? Whenever I see Below Deck and they go to any of those Mediterranean beaches, I'm like, okay, the landscape looks nice, the mountain looks nice, the houses look nice. What a disgusting beach. They're always about 10 feet wide, 10 feet deep, and pebbles. I don't want to lie on a pebble beach. And then there's Gigi, topless. And it rises again, Sterling every damn Sunday. I want to say thank you.
Sterling every damn night.
All right, Walter M. Sterling, good evening. It's about 50 minutes past the hour, driving across the country, 80, 95, I-90, the luge. Welcome. This is the sweetest time to drive, isn't it? The end of a holiday weekend. You got the lights just right in the cab. The temperature's finally perfect. You know the tires are inflated properly. The brakes haven't made a funny noise in a really long time. And there's no check engine light. I'm very jealous of an 18-wheeler because you have toggle switches on that dashboard that that I think just look amazing. I would just like to sit in your cab and play with the toggle switches. And that's not a sexual reference at all. That's a technocrat reference. Keith Mortensen, a United Parcel 18-wheeler driver, just retired to South Florida. Keith Mortensen is a real uncle, taking care of his adorable niece. He's got his own pool now. Alligators nearby. Don't worry about that. They'll go away. No state income tax. He left the suburbs of Philadelphia, and he moved to South Florida. And he built a house from scratch on his own land. He planned his retirement. You, in your 30s, do what I'm about to tell you. Put as much money in the 401k as you possibly can. And withdraw nothing until it's time to retire. That money doesn't exist. The minute you put it in there, it doesn't exist. Whatever happened in the stock market last week doesn't matter. It will come back. Hi, let me repeat. 2008 was worse. It will come back. That's what it does. It always comes back. But you save as much money as you can. And ask somebody who's much smarter about money than you what to do with the $20 extra you got a week. The $20 extra does not go to crap. You don't need the crap. What you need is to save for your retirement. Oh, it's so boring. I'll save later. I'll make money next year. I'll make more money. No, do it now. And then I want to thank you. There's another thank you I've been waiting for because I like thank yous. I did something years ago. This is a pretty good story. There's a place in North Carolina and throughout the Northeast called Duck Donuts. Duck Donuts is like a lot of local chains, 2-3 family-owned locations that make spectacular baked goods, notably spectacular donuts. And I was sent out by all of my in-laws to go to Duck Donuts one morning when we were at the Outer Banks. I don't understand the Outer Banks. I have no idea why people go there. I go down the shore or to Santa Monica. If I'm going to go to the beach, I want to go down the shore in Jersey or to Santa Monica. Why? Because their boardwalks are actual boardwalks. A boardwalk's supposed to have a beach on one side and a lot of really interesting tchotchke, cheesy shops on the other. I love those shops. I love saltwater fudge, saltwater taffy, cotton candy, popcorn. I love all of that. Really good pizza. Nothing tastes better than a slice of pizza mixed with the aroma of salt air. That, to me, is the greatest gourmet delicacy imaginable. Why have I never seen Gordon Ramsay deal with real American pizza? Because he's not an American. Deport him. Well, I was sent to Duck Donuts in North Carolina on a Sunday morning, and they custom make the donuts to your specs. You specify exactly what you want. They give you one of those iPads or something. You put it in, and then by the time you get up in the front of the line, yours is coming out of the oven. That's part of the appeal, of course. The line is an hour long, and I'm alone. And I don't think I had my smartphone with me because I'm not that smart. But two people in front of me is an attractive, athletic woman. She's a jock. And her sex appeal is that she's a jock. And she's with a guy who is a little taller than her, good looking. She's much smarter. And as I'm listening to them speak, I realize that she is much smarter. And I'm thinking, this is a lucky guy. He's kind of dumb, but nice. He seems very nice, seems to have a good heart. Those are things I can tell right away. I make many other mistakes, but I can tell if you're a good person or a bad person right away. And so far, that has served me well. That has served me well. That's why I've been married forever, because she's a good person and incredibly patient and never listens to the show. Why? I hear your show all day. I don't need to listen to it. I hear it all day. There you go. There's your answer. Well, I'm listening to these two, and I'm thinking, boy, he should ask her to marry him. If he doesn't ask her to marry him, he's crazy. All right, now I'm done getting my donuts, and they're cashing out. And I see him, and I look him in the eye and say, could I talk to you for a second? Could I borrow you for a second? And I think he thought I wanted him to help me get stuff into my car. he broke away from her. He came outside of Duck Donuts in North Carolina at the Outer Banks. And I looked him in the eye and I said, if you don't ask her to marry you, you will regret it the rest of your life. And I left, smiled and left. And he was stunned. And I could hear her saying, what did he want? What did he want? He probably made up a story that he needed help getting into the car. But I've always wondered if they got married. And I regret I didn't have a business card on me so I could look him in the eye and say, invite me to the wedding. See, that would have been the cool close. I would have looked him in the eye and say, all right, here's my card. Invite me to the wedding. And taken off, you know, like an old guy. Like old guys do. Hey, you know, you got to marry her. Don't let her get away, buddy. I always wondered what happened. Duck Donuts, North Carolina, 3 years ago. Yeah, 3 years ago. Sunday morning. Was that you? Did I look you in the eye and say, you got to marry her. If you don't marry her, you'll regret it the rest of your life. Was this inappropriate in any way? Was I interfering too much? I don't know. My phone number is 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. Coming up, you and I will talk about the challenges of vacation homes owned by your relatives. That's not a normal transaction. When you and I stay in our vacation homes of our relatives, that's not a normal transaction. That doesn't always end well. Think about that. You and I will talk about that in seconds. Sterling, every damn Sunday. Dave Scott, great Canadian broadcaster, coast to coast in Canada. Name of his show is Spaced Out Radio. You can hear it on YouTube. Spaced Out Radio. He's got a website, spacedoutradio.com, which has really cool, high-quality merch to make yourself an official Spaced Out person. Dave Scott, my dear friend, a great broadcaster. Did you know that right now two lesbian porn stars want to go up in one of those space capsules, like the blue capsule that the women went up in this week, in order to be the first to have sex in space? And they're press releasing this. They want to be the first to have sex in space. And I happen to know that they would not be the first to have sex in space. Do you know about this, Mr. Scott?
Well, I believe there was a married couple on the International Space Station that may have, you know, consummated space.
A former NASA space station payload specialist told me just what you said. There was a married couple. They believe they had sex in space, not because they admitted it, but because there is a spot on the space station where there are no mics or cameras. And she believed that happened there.
You'd have to. If you're up with your wife, you have to. You have to do it. And I'm sure it's happened a lot more than just that time.
I'm sure it has, too, because you'd want to be able to tell the grandchildren you've created there where they were conceived. Wouldn't that be a story? Wouldn't that be something if there was a child conceived there and then that's their origin story? Oh, my gosh.
I'm thinking about that right now. That would be pretty incredible. But you'd have to have a younger couple go up there. I mean, I believe the couple that was up there were in their 50s, so I don't think that would have happened.
And therefore, it's entirely possible the sex didn't finish.
I don't think unless they smuggled a Viagra pill or a Cialis pill up there, maybe not.
I am haunted by the interviews I did with Stephanie Osborne. Stephanie Osborne is a writer. She writes novels now, but she was a payload specialist for the space station for NASA. She was a sergeant or higher ranking. She was a big deal. And she retired and became a novelist, but she was a great guest. And I had her on as often as she would come on. And I asked her the question more than once. I said, Stephanie, why haven't we gone back to the moon? And Stephanie, who was candid and authentic and impressive, this is what she always said. And it didn't register fast enough. It took me time to realize, wait a minute. She said, because we can't. So what do you mean, we can't? Because all of the retired scientists took the plans home. They're sitting in scientists' basement. We sold off a lot of the launch pads. We sold off the rockets and the rocket boosters. We'd have to start from scratch. And a lot of the material we had, a lot of the plans, a lot of the drawings, NASA doesn't even have. And I accepted that, and I accepted that. And then I'm like, wait a minute. We got to the moon. We had very elaborate written plans, and you're telling me a bunch of scientists took them home and nobody bothered to say, hey, don't take those home or make a copy?
Yeah.
Right?
This is, well, you know what? The I don't know whether it's ego with NASA or whether it's just that they play stupid. Okay, recently NASA once again was talking about UFOs publicly and how they are so intrigued about all of this stuff that was going to happen with the United States Navy and the Air Force, and that they were very intrigued. And then recently, just a couple of days ago, there were more reports released on X about astronauts having interaction with UFOs while in space. But of course NASA doesn't respond. You know, they don't want that. They want to play dumb with the UFO subject. So it's not surprising, Walter, that, or pardon me, number one, because that's what I call you now. It's not surprising that NASA is playing stupid, that they got rid of all of this. They have it somewhere. Okay, this is why I think the reason why we don't go back to the moon, we're already there. There's already bases there. There's already people there.
That's well, considering, well, Dave Scott, considering it's the moon, how come amateurs can't see them see those bases on their telescopes?
Well, I mean, if they're on an area of the moon that is not rotating, then they're not going to see it.
All right. What other updates?
If you put them on the dark side or the alleged dark side of the moon, they're not going to see it.
I understand. Dave Scott, expert in UFO, metaphysics, all the things that we care about. Mr. Scott, do you have other updates that you would like to share tonight?
Walter, I have an incredible story for you, because you know how last week I was telling you about my anniversaries of the UFO landing and the alien contact? Do you remember that?
Yes.
Well, tonight is another anniversary for me. At about 10:19 Pacific time, so we're coming up on that in about an hour, I was interviewing a gentleman about Buddha, Buddhist theory, everything on Spaced Out Radio. Harvey Kraft was his name. And while we were talking to Harvey, I had my old makeshift radio station in my old house, which was right beside my front door. I kicked my daughter downstairs into a bedroom that I built her, and I set up a little radio studio there. And I had this big window right in the front of the house beside my front door. And I didn't have my door lights on. This is 10 years ago tonight. I saw something move out the window. And I'm thinking, darn it, I have a friend coming over, and they're going to knock on the door. My dogs are going to go nuts. The walls are paper thin, and dogs barking while you have a microphone on is never a good thing. And there was no dogs barking. So I continued on, and all of a sudden I felt like I was being watched. I look out the window, which is about 3 feet to my left, and outside the window, I see a giant gray head with big almond-shaped black eyes staring at me through the window. It was an alien gray. Now, I did what any man would do because my microphone was on mute. I shrieked and I fell back in my chair. And then I gained my wits. I jumped back up, jumped to the window because I want to see this thing run off. And right, it was gone. It had vanished. There's no way that in that short span of time that a human being could have disappeared right like that.
And 10 years ago tonight, the legend of spaced out radio, of the alien we call Carl, was born. And it's one of the scariest things that's ever happened to me on the radio.
Take me to that moment of when you looked up and saw it, and exactly where in your body and how you got scared. Was it physical fear, psychological? What was your fear?
Both. Walter, it was both fear. Like, I saw, basically what happened was I turned to look out the window because I knew I saw something moving outside out of the corner of my eye.
Right.
And I put my microphone on mute and I was going to stand up to see who was at my front door. Was it a friend? Was it maybe somebody trying to sneak up and check out my house? Was it somebody who was going to break into my car because we had a car vandalizer around at that time? And as I turned and swiveled my chair to the window, there was the head and the upper portion of the body. And it was just standing there staring right back at me. Now, it took a couple of seconds for my eyes to act, well, my brain to actually compute what my eyes were seeing. And when I did, I fell back in my chair and I screamed, right? A shriek of screaming. And in my headphones, my guest Harvey is sitting there talking away. He doesn't have a clue because my microphone is on mute. Okay? And when I finally gained rationale in that split second and jumped up because I wanted to see this thing run off, okay? And like I said, if it was a human, from the vantage point of that window, I would have seen it if it ran past my garage. I would have seen it if it cut across my lawn. I would have seen it if it dashed to the front of my house to go maybe to the other side of my house. It was gone. It was completely gone.
Now, later in your life, did it ever come back? Did a gray ever visit you again?
Yes.
When?
About 3 years, 3.5 years later.
Right.
I was doing my show, and all of a sudden, I felt the energy that I was being watched again. And I knew that energy. And I said to my guest, a guy named Olaf Phillips, a good friend of mine, and I said, "Olaf, Carl's back." And he's like, "Are you serious?" And I had about 25 minutes left on my show. I couldn't leave my microphone to go check. And all I was doing was staring out my window at that point. We weren't on YouTube at that point, so nobody could see it. But after the show, I have like a two-tiered driveway where my driveway comes up top, then it tiers down to where my carport is, and I had my vehicles down there. And I said, "Olaf, the show is over. I need to go outside here, and I need you to come with me and listen to me on the phone." And in between my vehicles, I saw this giant orb fly right between my vehicles and then come back. And it was like the symbols of a yin and yang. Okay? I walked over there. There was nothing. But every goosebump on my body and every hair on my body was standing up. So I said, "Olaf, I need to go. I need to call my ET guy, a guy named R. Keith Andrews." And I hang up on Olaf. I run upstairs on my patio. I get a hold of Keith. I said, "Keith, Carl's back." And he's like, "Dave, you couldn't have called at a better time." He goes, "I literally, for some unknown reason, woke up." He goes, "I've been fast asleep since 9:30, and I just woke up, and I didn't know why. And then all of a sudden, you called." I said, "Okay, cool." And he goes, "Where are you?" And he's never been to my house. I said, "I'm standing on my patio. I'm looking into my backyard. And there was this clicking sound happening in my backyard and then up my driveway. And it was just like the movie Signs, where you hear those creatures going, if you remember the movie Signs."
Yes.
And I'm listening to this. And I said, "Keith," and immediately, without me even telling Keith, I said, "Keith," or he says, "Dave, are they making any sounds?" And I said, "Yes, they're making this clicking sound, this." And I said, "It's like a conversation going on." He goes, "Okay." He goes, "I'm picking up that there is two in the backyard, one up the driveway, and they are freaking out right now." And I said, "Why are they freaking out? Because I'm nearly crapping my pants at this point."
And he goes, because when people usually feel them, they go inside and they hide. They get out of the danger zone. And you're standing there, and that's what's tripping them out.
Dave Scott, expert on UFOs, metaphysics. He has the best stories. He's the host of Spaced Out Radio. And you can find out more about Dave at spacedoutradio.com. Sterling every damn Sunday.
I don't fit in, I'm a misfit, oh. First thing on my mind is to get rich, oh. I'm a misfit, that means I don't fit. Nah, I don't fit in. I just bought a coupe, baby girl, get in. Lord, forgive me, I know I'ma sin tonight.
James Parker, and this is Florida Story.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, good to see you too.
For our first Florida Story, we're going down to Daytona Beach, where a Georgia man is charged with a double homicide. And here it is again. We've been noting this on Florida Stories for years now. Otherwise normal people from otherwise normal states can go to Florida and do the craziest things. In this one, a man was crashing with two friends he had recently met from West Palm Beach. It is believed our Georgia man in Florida murdered both of them. The cops are a little behind, though, because neighbors later reported hearing the gunshots, but not calling 911. Cops are kind of upset about this one. They're saying the neighbors really dropped the ball on this one. If you see something or hear something, you have to say something. But it's a really naive way to go about life in Florida. If you have to call 911 every time you hear a gunshot or a suspicious noise, the copper wires going into the 911 call center would melt. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we go to Lakeland, Florida. A Canadian named Scott and his wife, Andrea, were on vacation. Scott's parents had retired to the Lakeland, Florida area. He's just down on a visit when he goes out for a walk. It's not like going on a walk in Canada. This is a walk in Florida. He happens upon an 85-year-old named George who has a 10-foot-long alligator basically chewing off his foot. Canada man gets the guy's foot loose, uses his shirt as a tourniquet, and saves the day. Good job, Canada man. Now he's got a great story to go tell all the other Eskimos when he gets home. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Our next Florida story, we're going down to Miami-Dade County. They got the red light cameras in South Florida thrown out because some activists went and they asked a question to each of the cities in South Florida that had the red light cameras, and they got different answers. Example, when they're asked where a car is supposed to stop for the red light camera, Aventura said behind the stop line, Key Biscayne said behind the crosswalk, Homestead said behind the prolongation of the curb. And since all these different cities had different answers, the judge said this violates state law. Well done, Florida. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
According to a new analysis from LendingTree, Florida ranks number one as the destination among home buyers who are looking to move across state lines. That's right. People switching states are choosing Florida over every other state, despite all these stories you're hearing. 12.4% of all mortgage requests made by out-of-state movers were for homes in Florida. There's no punchline there. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our final Florida story, we go down to Bradenton, Florida, where an 85-year-old Florida woman says the lawyers representing her trailer park will have to kill me first before she lets them remove an illustration of the Virgin Mary that's painted on the side of her mobile home. Let me tell you what's going on here. Have you seen those single-wide mobile homes where one end is basically one window from top to bottom? All right, well, that window needed to be replaced, so instead of replacing it, she got a big piece of what looks like particle board filled in that hole, and there's a Virgin Mary painted on it. To be honest, the Virgin Mary actually doesn't look that bad. According to the Bradenton Herald, the property manager says she had permission to replace the window, but she must resubmit her project to the Architectural Review Committee for approval or remove the painting. So now we have a classic battle between 85-year-old Florida woman and the Architectural Review Committee of the Tropical Palms Trailer Park in Bradenton, Florida. What kind of power-hungry madman is on the Tropical Palms Trailer Park's Architectural Review Committee and can't let it slide that some old lady put a Virgin Mary on the plywood where her window used to be? And how do you think Virgin Mary feels? This woman says, you're going to have to kill me first before you take that painting down. Virgin Mary's like, hey, don't die on my account. That's not even that good of a painting. Why does the Tropical Palms Trailer Park have an architectural review committee? They don't want to stain the good reputation of the architecture of the trailer park? I'm sorry, your trailer park is too good for the mother of Jesus himself? Oh, excuse me. Architectural Review Committee of the Bradenton Tropical Palms Trailer Park. How much you want to bet no one on that committee is even an architect? How much you want to bet it, no one on that committee even knows an architect?
Wait. Hold my beer.
Follow me on Twitter at Florida Stories J. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story.
Spelling every night. Study books, rusty books. Get cozy with the owl and
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my book, The Hummingbird and the Hawk. Gavin placed the key card on the dresser and propped his suitcase beside it. Moving behind her, he followed her gaze out across the stunning landscape. Dense green trees covered rolling hills, a stark contrast to the city they'd left behind several hours earlier, as soon as work concluded for the afternoon. I've been to this resort a few times before. Some people like the cutesy little bed and breakfasts, but I prefer having more amenities available. He rested his hand at the small of her back. I made dinner reservations for us tonight. There's a spa on the premises if you want to check it out sometime tomorrow. And when we came in, I caught a glimpse of the giant tub in the other room, which I fully intend on making use of at some point this weekend. Olivia swiveled to face him. You can't possibly celebrate all your wins like this. Only the significant ones. Without releasing her, he jerked his head toward a table in the corner. Speaking of celebrating, I saw the staff left us a bottle of champagne, as I'd requested. Shall we? A smile slowly spread across her face. We might as well get started. Gavin gave her hip a little squeeze, then set out to retrieve the champagne from its bucket of ice. He popped the cork and filled two long-stemmed glasses before passing one to Olivia. Here's to the first of many successful trials, he said, clinking his glass against hers. Her lashes fluttered as she took her first sip. So far, we do seem to work well together. The sultry notes in her voice stirred something inside him. He glanced at his watch to calculate how much time they had before their dinner reservation. We have a couple hours before we're due downstairs, so here's what I'm thinking. He downed half his glass in one gulp and set it back on the table. You enjoy the champagne and the view. I'm going to investigate that tub I was talking about. As he inched around her, he brought his lips close to her ear. Don't wait too long to join me, though. He kicked off his shoes and left them next to his suitcase. Inside the bathroom, an oversized tub took up almost half the space. He turned the faucets on, running his fingers beneath the water to check the temperature, then investigated the contents of the closets and cabinets. A stack of thick towels sat on a shelf, and he pulled out two and set them on the sink. After reading the label on one of the small bottles he found, he uncapped it and poured the contents into the tub. Foamy bubbles appeared in the water, filling the room with a floral scent. He took off his clothes and left them in a folded pile on the other side of the sink. Taking care not to slip on the tile, he climbed into the tub, wincing when the hot water hit his skin. Little by little, he lowered himself into a sitting position, the tension easing out of his muscles as he adjusted to the temperature. When he reached for the handles to turn off the water, he saw Olivia standing in the doorway. She had changed into one of the white fluffy robes provided by the resort and held a champagne glass in each hand. "I figured you wouldn't mind the refill," she said. He leaned back, resting his arms along the outer ridge of the tub. "Not at all." She set the glasses down on the flat tile bordering the edge. As Gavin picked one up, she tugged on the ties of the robe, letting it slide off her shoulders and cascade to the floor. He sipped the champagne, enjoying the way the bubbles tickled his tongue while he took in the sight of her exposed curves. The fragrant foam came up to her collarbone as she sat opposite him, tucking her legs to the side of his. "Let me know if the water's too hot," he said. "It's fine." Exhaling, she tilted her head back. "Better than fine. This feels amazing." "You deserve it. We deserve it." Beneath the surface of the water, he rubbed her knee. "We've been working hard lately, and I can't wait to get you all to myself this weekend." Olivia twirled the stem of her glass back and forth between her fingers. "You'd better be careful," she said, a smirk curling her lips. "I might start expecting something like this every time we win a high-profile case." He returned her sly expression. "You just might be worth it." I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and you're listening to an excerpt from my book, The Hummingbird and the Hawk, which is available at Amazon and at thealandon.com. If you'd like to hear some uncensored excerpts and get some sneak peeks of what's coming in the future, you can go to patreon.com/thealandon, and don't forget to send me all your deepest, darkest thoughts at smuttythea@gmail.com. Now, should we keep going? The sudsy water, sparkling champagne, and the close proximity of her body to his all mingled together to send a rush of heat spreading throughout him. Once he finished his drink, he reached over and yanked her wrist. "I don't know why you're sitting all the way over there. Come here." Her eyebrow flicked upward, the half-smile remaining on her face. "Maybe I didn't want to spill my champagne." "It's not like we have to clean it up, and we can always get more." His grip on her tightened as he repeated his demand. "Come here." The tub was large enough to allow her to maneuver without wasting a drop of her drink. She settled between his parted knees, reclining against his chest as the water sloshed around them. He wrapped his arms around her and brought his mouth to her ear again. "Much better, don't you think?" She took another long, slow sip. "Yes, Gavin, you're always right about everything," she teased. "Glad to hear you say so." while Olivia nursed her glass of champagne, he skimmed his palms along her torso, gliding across her slickened skin. Her head dropped back against his shoulder when he neared the outer swells of her chest, but she said nothing. He continued his languid caresses, never venturing too close to any sensitive spots, yet noted the subtle strain in her breathing. Though she couldn't move too much in her current position, the slight twist of her hips ignited another pulse of arousal. He increased his pressure as his hands roamed over her. Ducking his head, he planted a series of feathery kisses on her neck and shoulder, matching the rhythm of his deliberate strokes. A soft whimper resonated from her throat. Gavin took the empty glass away from her and placed it beside his. When his hands slipped underwater again, he fondled her chest, pulling her even closer as his fingers sank into her. He pressed into her from behind, and she squirmed. He nipped at her earlobe as he squeezed and manipulated her tender flesh. Though the dense foam prevented him from seeing below the water's surface, he'd long since memorized every inch of her body. While he tugged with both his teeth and fingers, he let one hand meander over her stomach, coming to rest at the apex of her thighs. Her hips rolled upward as if in pursuit for more of his touch, and he debated how much he wanted to tease her. His hand dipped between her legs. A gasp hissed through her teeth, and he repeated the movement, never progressing too far. "Look at you now," he murmured. "Imagine if they could see you like this. Everyone from those witnesses you destroyed on Cross to your former co-workers kept up all night by thoughts of how much they miss you." Olivia writhed against him, but didn't answer. "I find you utterly fascinating. How you command control of every other room you're in. Yet here, you all but collapse into my arms and surrender to me." A heated moan left her lips. "I think we're both getting what we want out of this," she mumbled. "Oh?"